Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. It's Friday, September 15th. I'm your host, Stephen Overly. So imagine it's the year 2028, and the U.S. is at war with China. That's the hypothetical scenario that Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher asked a bunch of Wall Street bankers to roleplay earlier this week. He believes the U.S. is not taking bold enough action to rein in China's technological growth, and that real conflict with Beijing would hurt the economy in ways that both the government and industry are ill-prepared to handle. For context here, Gallagher is one of the House's biggest China hawks, and he's also the chair of the House Select Committee on China, a perch from which he's been pushing fellow lawmakers and the Biden administration to get more aggressive against Beijing. On today's episode of Politico Tech, Gallagher explains how these war games have reinforced his view that new restrictions on outbound investments and exports are needed, and why he thinks Chinese retaliation against American companies may just be the cost of getting tough. Well, Congressman Gallagher, thank you for joining us on Politico Tech. Appreciate you being here.
It's an honor to be with you.
Well, listen, I want to start. I know you've just come back from New York. You were there meeting with some Wall Street executives and other business leaders. You conducted this war game, I'm told, sort of plotting out what would happen if the U.S. and China got into a conflict over Taiwan. How exactly did this play out?
Well, we examined a scenario that took place in 2028, in which it became evident that China was going to invade Taiwan, and we explored the economic and financial options we had to deter such an invasion. And I think the moral of the story is that none of the options were great. And then we got, hopped into the time machine and went back to the present day in 2023 to examine what choices could we make now in order to create a broader set of options in a crisis scenario in the future. What steps can we take to reduce our supply chain vulnerabilities and reliance on China? What steps can we take to reduce the outflow of U.S. capital to China, which in some cases is financing their military modernization? So it was a very useful exercise, if for no other reason than it highlighted the complexity of our economic and financial relationship with China, which is what makes this competition so difficult, I think, as well as emphasize that we need a sense of urgency. And as painful as some of these choices might be today, it's far more painful to continue the status quo and then find ourselves stumbling into a crisis for which we are ill-prepared.
And what were those top changes that need to be made to avoid kind of the 2028 crisis scenario you discovered?
Well, at a procedural level, the most obvious thing is to force the executive branch and the Treasury Department and the Commerce Department in particular to actually do robust wargaming of this scenario in the way that the Pentagon does. Put differently, we have a very well thought out theory of escalation on the conventional and strategic military side of this crisis, and we war game it. We have war plans, but no such equivalent exists in our civilian agencies. And that needs to happen. And more to the point, when we conduct war games, Treasury and Commerce, and I would even say the Fed and major industry should be part of the process, because this wouldn't just be confined to a military conflict. It would be an all the above. It would involve the use of financial and economic weapons. And I would suggest, even as we maintain strategic ambiguity on the nature of our military response, we should have strategic clarity when it comes to the economic costs we are prepared to impose on China if they do something as stupid as make a move on Taiwan. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, in order to, if nothing else, buy time, we need to put guardrails on the outflow of U.S. capital to China, because it's financing their military modernization, the biggest peacetime buildup of a military since World War II, as well as their attempt to dominate the commanding heights of key technology. And that's just something we shouldn't be doing. We shouldn't be funding our own destruction. At a broader level, and maybe most difficultly, figuring out a way to onshore the production of key things like advanced pharmaceutical ingredients or diversify supply chains so they're not all concentrated in China is something we need to get, figuring out the best set of carrots and sticks to effectuate that is very important.
Are you planning to do any of these war games with the tech industry? Because obviously any conflict with China, you know, there's military dimension, economic dimension, and a huge tech dimension to that as well.
I think that would be very useful. You know, we've done two so far. The first was a more pure military scenario. This one focused heavily on the finance side, though we did dig into pharmaceuticals and critical minerals. One with the tech community, I think would be very useful for our members. You know, one of the first things we did as a committee was go to Silicon Valley, and we spent 2 days engaging with leaders in the tech community. But I do find these tabletop exercises have a useful way of kind of pushing people outside their intellectual comfort zone and forcing them to go beyond sort of just the standard conversation or the standard back and forth. And so I think that exercise would be very useful, particularly as we look at how to shore up or strengthen our export controls for key technology, which is something we've been digging into on the committee and something I think needs to happen.
Is there anything in particular you think you could learn or would like to learn from doing one of these war games with tech companies at the table?
Yeah, I think a lot of us were in support of the October 7th China sanctions, and we're nearing the 1 year anniversary of those. And I give the administration credit for it, and think bringing along the Dutch and the Japanese in particular was very useful. However, it seems that there's a lot of loopholes. And one thing we're interested in learning more about is how is China still getting access to a lot of the equipment necessary for chip production? And if they're even if we're able to restrict their access to leading edge chips, and I'm not sure that we are actually based on what I've seen, what are the implications of them dominating when it comes to foundational chips, which are still critical and still give them incredible coercive leverage? And so we want to dig into that. Obviously, chips are a key component of almost every advanced technology. The other area I think is obvious is, and it's related to capital outflows, is how do we disentangle our money and our technology companies from Chinese AI companies? I think it's obvious that we shouldn't be allowing American venture capital organizations to fund Baidu and other Chinese AI companies, given the stakes of this competition. There should be a sectoral prohibition on investments in AI in China. And indeed, the Biden administration executive order claims to have that. But if you sort of look at their advanced rulemaking, it's clear they carve out a lot of sort of subcategories when it comes to quantum AI and microelectronics. So that's another area to dig into. The one thing that hasn't received as much attention, and quite honestly, it's not something we've tackled yet on the committee, is biotechnology and biosecurity. I think there's a whole series of things we could do to dig into that issue. You know, obviously, I think it's still on people's mind in light of the pandemic. You know, I think it's obvious that if China were able to dominate synthetic biotech, they might use it for dystopian purposes. So digging into that, I think, would be a very useful exercise as well.
Is that something that we will see more from? Is that an issue we'll see the committee dig into more?
I hope so. You know, obviously, what I'm trying to do is operate in a very bipartisan fashion. So I don't want to get ahead of, you know, I'd want the Democrats to be bought into that. I think it's an issue that deserves fair game. And even as, let's say, the more controversial aspects of that, like the origins of coronavirus, we have another select subcommittee that's investigating that. So Brad Wenstrup can tackle that. Well, we can tease out the broader implications of biosecurity and biowarfare in the context of the overall U.S.-China competition. So I hope we can dig into that.
We'll be right back. Well, I want to get you to elaborate on two things you mentioned, both capital controls and export controls. So in terms of the capital controls, you mentioned this executive order that President Biden put out, kind of putting some restrictions on tech investments. You don't think that has gone far enough. What are you looking to add there through the committee, through the House as a whole?
And let me say it's a positive first step. I just don't think it can be the last step. One, as I mentioned before, I believe in a sector-based approach. I don't think playing whack-a-mole with all these different Chinese companies on all these different lists that different federal government agencies maintain makes sense. We've seen the ability of China to evade the list, or even if you have a company on the list like AVIC, AVIC owns a bunch of subsidiaries that are just as pernicious. And so a list-based or company-based approach doesn't make sense to me. It has to be sector-specific. I would expand the sectors that are in the executive order and not have carve-outs for subsectors. So that's my concern on the sectors. The second thing is just putting Treasury in the lead and giving Treasury a ton of exemptions and off-ramps makes me a little nervous given Treasury's dovish history on this issue. And I'm not just saying that under the Biden administration, under the Trump administration, that was the case as well. And there was a division in the administration and Treasury has a habit of slow rolling some more aggressive measures. And I don't think we have the luxury of time, at least that's what the war game illustrated. So eliminating those off-ramps or putting a different agency in the lead makes sense to me. Finally, and what's most difficult is the executive order only deals with active private investment, private equity and venture capital. That's at most 17% of the problem. Most of the money flowing from America to China is via public equity markets or via passive investments, indexes, ETFs, things like that. I think if the principle is that we don't want to fund our own destruction or Chinese technology that could be used in genocide, then it shouldn't matter whether it's passive or active or public or private. There should be a set of guardrails that apply to all capital outflows. So expanding the different types of capital on which we place restrictions makes sense to me. So those are the three areas where I think the executive order can be improved and strengthened. Regardless, though, I think what's important, and one thing we heard from Wall Street, which gives me hope, is that, of course, Wall Street executives, bankers, major asset managers have a more dovish position on China than I do on balance. But as long as Congress legislates a solution and has an appropriate transition period or glide path, I think they could live with it. And what they fear more than anything else is uncertainty and unpredictability. And there's inherent unpredictability in doing this via executive order, because, of course, an executive order can disappear with the new administration. And so putting this on a solid legislative foundation, I think, is the most essential thing, because it will provide clear red lines for the financial community and they can adapt to the new regime.
Well, I was going to ask how you bring, some of your Republican colleagues along with that, given that there seems to be this constant tension between, putting restrictions on business in the name of national security when it comes to China, while at the same time, light touch regulation and not hampering American companies. It sounds like you're saying that there is a balance to be found there.
I sort of recognize the inherent tension, and there's always going to be a balance. But again, I think if there's an appropriate glide path into the new regime, and again, I actually think a sector specific approach makes this easier, because a lot of the chaos and a lot of the bureaucratic overreach stems from the fact that you have different agencies maintaining different lists, and there's a lot of confusion. So a simpler and stronger approach, I think, is one that we could all live with. I guess for Republicans that think we shouldn't be putting such restrictions on capital outflows, perhaps my most important task is just to continue talking about the nature of the threat we face from the Chinese Communist Party and how it is so important that we take action now. And what we're seeing on the military side, what we're seeing in terms of their economic coercion, is incredibly troubling. I just want us to do everything possible to prevent a war with China, because if nothing else, our war game teased out how destructive such a conflict would be, both in terms of the economic cost as well as the human cost.
Well, the export control question, which is the other piece of this we've been talking about, I saw comments you made recently after the Chinese telecom company Huawei announced a new smartphone with sort of this high-end chip in it, high-end at least for China, and you had called for expanding export controls there to chip technology. At the same time, though, we are seeing China start to retaliate against U.S. tech companies because of existing export controls. So how much retaliation is tolerable or acceptable here is kind of the price of imposing these sort of trade restrictions on China?
Well, I think we have to take steps to defend ourselves. And if we've already gone sort of halfway in terms of cutting off the export of advanced chips, we should plug up all the loopholes we've seen. Otherwise, we're just kind of neither here nor there, and we look weak. Specifying the precise amount of retaliation, I mean, I can't sort of quantify that for you. Nor do I think the fear of the response should govern our actions. We should do what's necessary to prevent China from acquiring key technology that we think they're going to use for bad purposes, for purposes that are disadvantageous to our own interests. And I think what could mitigate any response is ensuring that we bring as many allies and partners along for the ride as possible, that whatever framework we articulate for robust export controls is something that within the free world we can have buy-in. And I think that makes it, I think that would soften any blow that China could offer in response. You know, if it's a matter of an American chip manufacturer losing, you know, access to Chinese customers, well, you know, these are the same companies that are begging for, you know, government subsidies under the CHIPS Act. And I'm not sure how one could be actively lobbying for federal government subsidies at the same time you're lobbying against restrictions on doing business with China or selling certain technology to China, given that the whole impetus behind the CHIPS Act is to reduce our reliance on chip manufacturing in Asia and bring home some of that production. So I don't know. I can't define the precise level, but again, I don't think the fear of provocation or retaliation should be the primary driver of our action.
Well, you anticipated my next exact question, which was that argument you just outlined from some companies like Intel that have said cutting off access to Chinese customers gives them less money to invest in manufacturing here in the U.S. I was wondering how much you buy that argument. It sounds like you're not particularly sympathetic to it.
I don't buy it. I think one thing we could do, it would make sense, and you know, I say this as someone who voted against the CHIPS Act, but I would love for, you know, I would love to be proven wrong, and I would love for there to be a domestic renaissance of chip fabs. But what I'm hearing from a lot of companies who were going to compete for CHIPS grants is that the regulatory conditions attached to the grants are cost prohibitive for them. So I think pairing government subsidies or government incentives with aggressive deregulation is the bipartisan path forward if we're going to try to incentivize onshoring. And more to the point, figuring out how we fix the workforce aspect of this. Because what we're seeing, at least in terms of TSMC's desire to make investments in the United States, is that they can't get the associated workforce necessary to set up chip fabs in Arizona and things like that. So again, I understand why you know, a company like Intel, you know, wants to make as much money as possible. But if you're going to ask the American taxpayer to give you money, I think it's reasonable for the American taxpayer to say, okay, you're going to have to accept a set of restrictions on your ability to do business in China.
One last issue I'd love to get you to quickly weigh in on, because it's something we've talked about here on the podcast, and that's this idea of generative AI being used to generate deep fakes that are then used in U.S. politics. And there's an intersection here with the Select Committee on China, because there have been some reports put out recently that China is using AI to generate deep fakes and circulating them, you know, online with this goal of meddling in and undermining U.S. democracy. And I wonder where you stand on that issue.
Well, we actually just had a roundtable yesterday examining the sort of aggressive CCP propaganda efforts. This issue came up. We had three experts. You know, none of them could cite sort of a set of case studies where the use of deepfakes affected an election in the United States. But all of them said that this is on the near horizon. I don't have any doubt that given the opportunity, the CCP would seek to sow division in our country and potentially meddle in our elections if they saw a benefit. All the more reason why we not only need to be aware of how they might wield technology like deepfakes, but also take action to prevent certain CCP-controlled platforms such as TikTok from becoming the dominant media platform in America. Because the issue with TikTok is not just that they could track your location and know exactly, you know, the weird videos that you watch, but also that a lot of young Americans in particular use TikTok as a news source. So if the CCP can determine via its control of ByteDance and ByteDance's algorithm what news you get, that's the ultimate tool for influencing or undermining an election. And again, sowing divisions. And to quote Wang Huning's mid-1990s book, pitting Americans against Americans.
And so with all these issues on your plate, I mean, what's next from the committee in terms of investigations or hearings?
Well, our investigation into BlackRock and MSCI continues. And again, the goal is not to embarrass anybody or get a headline. It's to inform sensible legislation when it comes to restrictions on U.S. investments in China, particularly Chinese military sectors and technology sectors. We have also started to investigate this story concerning a illicit Chinese biolab in California, and have issued a subpoena with that in mind. And we're trying to ascertain the truth of what's going on there. Right now, you know, having spent the first few months of our committee really focusing on the military aspect of the competition, particularly as it pertains to Taiwan, right now we're doing our deep dive into the economic, financial, and technological competition. That will continue for at least the next month. And the goal is to do what we did with the military report, which is to unite in bipartisan fashion behind a series of recommendations. And these are recommendations and policy proposals that we hope could be legislated into reality in the 118th Congress, which is, of course, is divided. And therefore, this needs to be bipartisan. And so that's the goal. It's really to identify the center of gravity in the 118th Congress in terms of what we can do to put ourselves on a better path in the near term to prevent a war with China and over the long term win this strategic competition.
Got it. Well, listen, Congressman Gallagher, thank you for joining us here on Politico Tech.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
That's all for Politico Tech this week. What tech risks with China should we be talking about? Tell us about it at techpodcast@politico.com. And for more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior producer is Annie Reese. Our editors are Steve Heuser and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overley. I'll see you here on Monday.